Hello, hello, and welcome to Peanut Bread Quarterly Slush Pile. It's so good to be back here, even though here isn't anywhere. It's still on Zoom, and apparently will forever be so, which is wonderful since we have such an international community participating on this. So Peanut Bread Quarterly Slush Pile has been on a bit of a break, so let me refresh our old slushies as well as anybody new listening in how this works. We, as we're reading submissions, every now and then we're struck by something and say that would make great fodder for the podcast. So we are so grateful that our poets who submit, when we follow up and ask them, hey, could we talk about you on the show? They are willing for us to have this very open editorial recorded meeting. So it's stressful for all of us, but absolutely one of the most rewarding and experiences that we have together as a group. Also because this group can meet and work with each other that we don't often get to do. So I think now is the appropriate time for me to say that I am having a case of second bottles delivered. And if they come while we're on, I am going to run and have the person help me drag it into my foyer because I have to sign for it. And I think our slushies will understand, right?
Absolutely.
What kind of bottles?
Second bottles.
What are second bottles?
What word are you saying?
I am saying second, as in two,
okay,
as in bottles of
like
wine,
an ordinal of two.
That you don't second. Start your night off with.
There's seconds. There's seconds.
Second bottle. I thought you were
right.
So you got to deal.
What are second
happy.
Bottles? Like, is that after your first?
Second bottles are second not bottles? As good as first bottles.
It means you get a deal, right, Kathy?
You start with your best bottle. Right? Start with your best
wine?
Bottle.
Wine. Wine.
Save it. You start
these
with
are
your
pressings
best bottle.
Of the grapes.
And then you can drink the cheap stuff.
It's the okay. Cheap wine for the drunk guests. That's all you had to say.
Yeah. Exactly. This is the case of you don't care. You can bring it anywhere. You open another one. Who cares? You know, it's that stuff. Which really, I have done this before. It's you know. Honestly, out of the 15 bottles I'm receiving, don't even ask me what I paid. It's so cheap. There will be two that I really will have to like pawn off on people, but the rest will be really drinkable. Right?
That's such an endorsement. This wine, it's drinkable. Would you like some wine? It's drinkable.
My friend Blake says that about every wine, even if he absolutely loves it, he'll go, this is drinkable. So yeah, so that's going to happen. But they might not even come while we're on air. But no. So anyway, this me that keeps talking, let's get used to everybody's voices. I'm Kathleen Volkmiller. And I guess I'm going to bounce it to, we'll stay in the country. We'll stay in country for a minute and bounce it to Marion Wren.
Woohoo! So Marion Wren here in the great state of North Carolina, in a technological Bermuda Triangle. So I've got like 10% on my laptop. My husband just ran my charger over from one house to another. We just said goodbye to his in-laws. And I am so glad to be standing here in front of a page on my laptop that has your beautiful faces, PBQ crew, and poetry. So I'm going to bounce it now to Samantha.
Hi, everyone. My name is Samantha Neugebauer, and I am here in D.C., where across the street from where I am, Sandra Day O'Connor's funeral has just started at the National Cathedral.
Oh, wow.
So there's lots of security everywhere, and it feels pretty, you know, monumentous. But I will take us out of the country and shoot us north to Dagny.
Oh, thanks, Sam. Dagny Forest here up in Canada, just outside the capital, Ottawa, and there's nothing interesting going on here today. So I'm going to bat it right across the Atlantic to Jason.
Hi, Jason Schneiderman. I am back at the University of Nottingham after my very exciting trip to the Orkneys.
Ooh, wonderful. Yeah. Are you still in session?
I don't know. I'm not teaching. I don't know. I have no idea what's going on. I have no idea.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, the office is open. Apparently,
I'm in my office. Yes, it will close. It does. I mean, this is one of the nice things about like being outside of the United States is that things actually close. Like we're closed from December 22nd to like January 6th.
Yeah, I think most universities do that, don't they? Actually, like lock up for at least that week.
Oh, my university is closed for like Christmas and the day after, and then like we're back.
Oh wow.
Oh yeah.
Like there are like five days a year. My school is actually closed, like locked.
Wow. Okay. I do think everybody's off from Christmas to New Year's at Drexel. I think. Anyway, who cares? That's boring. what we have to talk about today that's not boring. Well, first of all, let's give a nod to Talia Thomas.
Yay.
Hi.
Talia.
Yeah.
Welcome back around to America. Hi, Talia. Where are you?
Hi, I'm Talia Thomas. I'm in North Philadelphia, actually, and it's really great to be back working with PBQ.
I'm glad too. Yeah, so the loyalist of slushies will know that we've said that name for quite a while, and then Talia focused on her studies for quite a while, and now she's on co-op again, and which means we get to hang out, which is wonderful. That's terrific. So grateful to have Talia, and so grateful to have Jody Ballas, a poet who submitted to Paint a Bride Quarterly, say that we could actually do this today. So what we're going to do is read her poems aloud, a few of them, and share our editorial discussion with you. And, you know, there's been no rehearsal. This is it for all of us. Right?
No way.
You probably can tell that already. This is not rehearsed. Unscripted. Coming at ya. Mm-hmm. Are we going to start with this lovely concrete poem? Okay, so this is the poems of Jody Ballas, and this first poem is called Walking to Surrender. And who would like to read it?
I'll read it.
Mayor. Do you want to describe it, I guess? And we can tell our slushies to go to pbqmag.org and take a peek if you would like to see how this sits on the page. But Marianne will describe it a scooch for those who are just listening.
Yes. So imagine like a chevron. Is that right? Like a chevron, yeah, but on its side, right? So it's sort of like an arrow-ish pointing to the right. And she's achieved this by working the left margin, right? So the left margin is flush left, but then indents until there's like a point in the middle, and then it comes back out. So it's like, you know, arrow pointing right. Walking to surrender. The ghost at my side, the knife in my coat pocket, hanging on the coat rack. I yield to morning in apprehension almost every morning. I'm hardening, becoming the weight of two dead trees. A spool of thread wound so tight, it's hard to find the starting point. The dull tip of a needle is useless. I try and unknot the shoelace from yesterday, the muscle of memory below the ribs, and figure out which direction I'm headed or which route is correct for my mental state. I've been trying to correct, but cannot correct until I surrender entirely to the blinding wave of fear.
Nice.
Nice. Thank you. Nicely read. Okay. Yeah. So there's some commas in here. Yeah, a couple periods, but it does definitely give you that. The poem has a volition of itself, mm-hmm. right? You did a great job of illustrating that for us, Mary. Thank you.
Thank you. What, you know,
One of the things, slushies, if you get a chance to actually look at it on the page, the sentence, right? A spool of thread wound so tight, it's hard to find the starting point, long dash, the dull tip of a needle is useless, period. The line breaks are so interesting on, like it's wound so tight, it's hard to find the starting point. You'd think point would be on the same line, right? For the thought, but she actually breaks starting point, right? So it drops down on point. And I kind of dig that, right? Because it's really talking about not knowing how to find the start of something, right? And so dropping the point down to the next line sort of emphasizes that that tangle.
And the word point is at the point in the arrow.
Exactly.
Right. The dull tip of a needle is, it's on that point.
But it's at the back of that point rather than at the leading edge, which right? is what feels so mm-hmm. interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like the shape of this poem. I'm not often a fan of concrete poetry, but I feel like this really works here, and it just kind of pulls you across the page and through the ideas.
And there's kind of a winding up until it reaches the point, and then when it's receding, there's a kind of unwinding. Like the image system really changes from sort of getting denser and denser and denser. And then it kind of, the arrow of the chevron becomes about unraveling all of that density. But also, it's such a fascinating ending, until I surrender entirely to the blinding wave of fear, that, you know, we think this is about escaping something. And in the end, we're told it's about, embracing the thing that causes the terror.
Right. And, you know, as someone who struggles with depression and anxiety, just putting it out there, slushies, right? That the sense of I yield to mourning in apprehension almost every morning really ties in with the Jason's point about the sort of ambivalence of it's like ambivalence and propulsion for this poem, right? Yeah. That is really compelling.
Yeah, and look at the title. You just said the title, Walking mm-hmm. to Surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I feel that every line almost gives me another way into the poem's shape. Like when I start it, I'm thinking, oh, kind of is the poem sort of a body making space for the ghost? Is it, you know, the pocket making space for the knife? Is it, you know, the knob of the coat rack? And ultimately, I sort of had to just accept the shape for what it is and maybe what it isn't, and me not knowing that. Mm-hmm. But I really love the idea of the shape of the poem, yes, as a chevron, but also of this kind of body walking. And I don't know if that's reading too much into it, but I also think that this poet might allow me to do that and kind of like that end too, that I really love, because there's that idea of kind of like going, you know, forward or through your fear to get to the other side, that, you know, I think is really great here.
It's kind of both mysterious and highly relatable at the same time. And for me, the mystery in a sense begins with those really concrete opening lines, which I love: the ghost at my side, the knife in my coat pocket, which is just so evocative and where's this going? And then speaking to the abstraction, Jason, that I think you were pointing out in the latter lines of the poem, it does become much less concrete as you kind of approach this blinding wave of fear, and that for me is the most relatable moment in the poem, even though it's also the most abstract.
I mean, from the very beginning, it kind of tells us that the images are working in a very odd way. The ghost at my side, the knife. It's like, is this okay? So, is the knife in the coat pocket the ghost, or is this like mm-hmm. an accumulation of image? And then I have no idea what those two dead trees are. I'm becoming the weight of two dead trees, but I love it.
Yeah.
And then what I thought was really subtly done and really masterful was the way the knot of the shoelace becomes the knot in the stomach. And so we don't have to say, when it becomes the muscle memory below the ribs, we're still carrying over this effort to unknot from the thread that's too tight, from the shoelace that's too knotted. And I thought that was really the way the images kind of keep moving from the metaphorical to the physical to the bodily is I think really well done.
Mm.
And I think with the weight of the two dead trees, this is a personal interpretation. Like I keep imagining, you know, when trees are entwined, right? Or if the trunk splits up into what seems like two separate trees, right? That sort of entwined notion almost anticipates, like, as a whisper toward the work of the spool of thread and the shoelace and the dull tip of a needle is useless is fantastic, because I think I once learned that you can untangle jewelry by with using a pen or a pin. You just tap the tangle, right, until the tangle releases, right? And so for me, that it just all those tangles, right, really, really cohere in the poem.
That works. You can just tap.
Yeah, it's a magic trick. I saw somebody do this once. Actually, I was buying a necklace for one of Kathy's daughters, and I wanted to get two, but the second one was all jangled up. And then the person at the checkout counter was like, "Watch this!" And he took a pen from behind his ear, and just talked to me. He was like, blabbing about something, and tap, 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 tap on the tangle, and the whole thing unraveled, and he was able to fish it out and sell it to me. So,
wow! I always thought the solution was just give it to someone else.
Exactly. But that is, you know, honest to God, like the truth of this poem, like the dull tip of a needle is useless, right? In this particular instance, most times it's not. Yeah. Yeah. Until I surrender entirely to the blinding wave of fear. Mm.
Mm-mm-mm. And I really do love where it ends.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We're like, we've pointed out every line and how great it is almost, but I would like to also point out that the knife in my coat pocket hanging on the coat rack,
mm-hmm.
that's when we get our first introduction of how immobilized the person is, right? Like, yeah. You assume the coat's on them.
Yes.
And then you get hanging on the coat rack. Like, it's there, but it's not, you know, the act of putting that coat on hasn't happened.
Mm.
With the knife in the pocket.
Yeah.
Makes it that much richer, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, like, at first, I wasn't really a fan of the title, Walking to Surrender, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not, why is that, right? Like, it's...
I know why.
What? Tell me why.
Cheeseball movie, Walking to Remember.
Oh, is that a cheeseball movie?
It is. Cheeseball book, cheeseball movie.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry. I did have to say it because I had the same thought. I was like, Walking to Surrender.
Right.
But it is the theme of the poem.
Right.
Right,
which is what you know, when your comments about the coat rack are really on the nose at the start of the poem. It's as if the speaker is about to leave and go walking, right? Like, so you know, putting the coat on to go walk. I mean, it sort of coheres again with the logics of the poem.
Yeah, there's a great short story by Britt Benning. I don't know if anybody that starts with a knife and a Bible in a pocketbook.
Mm.
And it just, you know, so I like that gets caught up for me, but yeah, it's unfortunate that I think Mandy Moore's in it.
Oh,
the movie.
All right. Well, let's desaturate the poem. All right. Decouple, unknot it from Walking to Remember with.
Well, you got a pin to stick in it?
Yeah, seriously. I'm doing that.
She's been doing it the whole time. you just didn't see it. She's been doing it the whole time.
It can't work if it's knotted up. It must just be if it's.
No, all right. Everyone has homework.
Everyone has homework.
Okay.
Knot it up jewelry and see if I'm not right about that.
I feel like this is some horrible corner of TikTok where people have like ASMRs where they unknot jewelry with like tapping.
Yep. Thank you.
Sounds like when I was in grad school, my friend and I got bed bugs in our apartment in West Philly, and her boyfriend thought he was being nice. So he cleared out our drawers for us before they, you know, bombed it. But I had a drawer with all my jewelry in it, and he just dumped it into like a box. And I mean, so much of that jewelry I just got rid of. I just could not enough.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Oh, wow.
That is like an existential threat, right? Not a jewelry. Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, what do you say? Do we feel ready to take a stab at voting on this?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
I'm rusty and nervous. I get so nervous.
1, 2, 3, vote. Oh my goodness, slushies, it's unanimous. I love when I can say it's unanimous. So yes, it's in. Thank you, Jody Ballas. Thank you. For the uninitiated, we literally take our fist and swing them about 1, 2, 3, and then we pop a thumb up or down. So that's what we just did.
It's a fun part. Yeah.
That is a fun part.
Yeah.
Okay, so a second one.
Ooh, right.
Yeah.
Second and last. Yep.
Maybe we should have Dagny tell everyone, and just in case people don't know, NFT is.
Yeah, so this poem is called My Body as an NFT. So cryptocurrency, NFT, all been kind of in the public sphere for a few years now, and cryptocurrencies best known this year for really bottoming out, right? So Bitcoin and such like. So understanding the notion of digital currency is important because it helps us to explain what NFTs are, because they're not the same thing. You can use cryptocurrency to purchase NFTs, but a non-fungible token, something that's fungible is tradable, right? So cash and Bitcoin are both things, one real, one not, that you can easily trade, right? You can trade a $20 bill or note for $5 bills or notes, right? Or for another 20 for that matter, or for a coin worth $20. But something that's non-fungible, there you can't exchange it for anything. There is no like for like, it's unique. And so in the context of what we're discussing here, NFTs became big on the art market because they were a way of creating a minted or unique version of a piece of art in the digital sphere. So that could be music, that could be visual art, it could be poetry. There are NFT poets. This is Jody Ballas, who we're reading today, is not an NFT poet, but she obviously was really, not that I'm aware of anyway, but she's obviously really into the notion of NFTs, hence this poem. So I don't know if anybody else wants to throw in anything there, but that's the NFT behind the title in this poem.
Dagny, I love you more and more every time you speak. Thank you for intervening in the world of tech and explaining things. Thank you. And usually it's to Kathy's brother, David.
Yes, that's right. Well, we could probably include a little video or two in our show.
Oh, Kathy's brother, David, NFTs is something he probably already knows about. We have
the right. You wouldn't write.
Yeah. We need to explain what a concrete poem is.
That's right.
I was having dinner with a blockchain engineer. And I kept saying, I don't understand blockchains. Like I know sort of, you know, like the thing that everyone knows about them, like the thing that people say, anyone can check them. If you make any alteration, then anyone can see it. And I'm like, but I still don't understand how any of that is true. And he was like, oh, I'll send you a video to explain it. And I watched the video and I was like, this did not explain it.
This didn't help you. Oh no.
Like how, like yeah. how, like if I want to go check the blockchain, like how do I do it?
Yeah.
You
no answers. No answers.
Yeah. You have to have a certain level of comfort with technology for this to make any sense at all. Mm-hmm. Cause I agree. The whole notion is sort of really quite bizarre.
Well, the NFT thing, isn't it just like a tulip scam? Like, is it just like, it only has value because people are really, really, it's like Beanie Baby.
Right. You know, like, well, you know, but it's interesting. There's a corner of the net and a group of, you know, people who are active in the arts who maintain it's still very relevant, and that ultimately it comes down to cultivating, you know, almost like cultivating a patron in days mm-hmm. of old, right? That, you know, the notion that you've got somebody who's into your art, has the means, wants to support it. And in the modern day, owning digital art appeals, so they'll pay for it. So a market does still exist, even with cryptocurrency having really bottomed out this year. But personally, yeah, I don't really get it. But obviously, there are people to whom this really appeals.
Yeah. Beanie Babies.
But Beanie Babies, yeah.
So Beanie Babies.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They have no value for me, but there are people who still have value, right? Who still...
No, there aren't. Yeah. No, it's like your parents are from the 1990s. Like, there aren't anyone who has value for them anymore.
I'm sure that there are somebody.
Kathy, I'm part of a group on Facebook that tries to sell Beanie Babies. It was a joke. My friend put me in this group. But the best thing is when someone like hasn't been in the group for long and comes in and is like, I just inherited all these Beanie Babies. Like, I think they're worth this amount. And everyone in the group, like, you know, sticks it to them and it's like, no, all you have is $4 at best.
Yeah. Oh, your Beanie Baby inheritances. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Well, shall we read the poem?
Let's do that. And thank you, Jody Ballas, for having us go down that rabbit hole.
May I read it?
Please.
Okay. My body is an NFT. Allow me to unshackle your wrists, bring you up off your knees and up to speed. Call me a good investment, the original copy, non-refundable, metallic over bone, wire over skin, untethered, the virtual sin. You cannot use me in some side hustle, sleight of hand deal. I am my own creator. Watch how I catapult through your veins and rush you faster than a thief with a shank. Electric, cryptic, hashtag my tongue is digital weight, begging for a bit of action you're not sure how to obtain. Tell me, is there mutual interest? I can tell you that I'm priceless. Watch closely before I become a liability, before your pockets explode, before the scales begin to rebalance themselves.
Great reading.
I wasn't sure whether to say the hashtag, but I thought I was supposed to say the hashtag.
Yeah, no,
I think so for sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Sure.
I love the energy of this poem. Mm-hmm. And I think there are different ways to interpret the idea of a body as a non-fungible token. I mean, because of course all humans are unique, right? So mm-hmm. we are that in a sense by definition, but I think there's a lot more going on here. I'm really interested in what you guys think.
I love it in the way in that this is the topic for a poem as well. Because everything that we just said about tulip scams and Beanie Babies, we might also say about what we're doing right now, right? Which is like, you know, a bunch of smart people hanging out, looking at poems as if they're priceless. And to us, they are, but it's like the most broke field ever, right? So like how authorship, how ownership, how audiences interact over a piece of art is at the heart of the slush pile as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that.
Yeah. And so back to the poem, what the poem is doing, right? Allow me to unshackle your wrists, bring you up off your knees and up to speed. That opening gesture is so cool because it addresses the body, right? Of a you who, of course, the reader is going to mistake is themselves in that second person address, right? It, which is
yes.
involving my body as well, you know? So I'm in and interested in leaning towards this poem from the get.
And it's such a weird relationship, right? Like here I am rescuing you. I'm the knight who's, you know, releasing you from bondage, the, you know, the liberator who's taking you out of this, you know, who's someone who's shackled okay. on their knees. And then it's the NFT and the relationship almost suddenly, like the act of salvation is transformed in such a weird twist.
Yeah.
I'm a good investment. Like, I mean, just, you know, like when Sleeping Beauty wakes up and the prince is like, hey, I'm a good investment.
Oh, we needed the eyebrows, but that doesn't come across on audio, Jason.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Amazing. That's great. I've been taking notes as we're talking for the show notes, and Jason's eyebrow might be the title of the episode.
I mean, I love the way that it sort of has a very tongue-in-cheek sense of humor about the NFT and the relationship between money and individuality and uniqueness and investment and I think it's wonderful. And I mean, I do feel like I'm living through this weird, uncanny moment where the digital is real and the real is somehow not. I mean, it is like, you know, if something terrible happens to you in it, but I have this sense that like the learning management system is where my college really is now.
Yeah.
And my building is just a building.
Totally.
And that really freaks me out. And the way that this does that with the body and, you know, the body is an NFT and that by having me, what you really have is this sort of like virtual simulacra, this kind of, you know, usable thing that's not quite real is really beautiful.
I just love all the different possible interpretations and levels with this too. I mean, our bodies again, I mean, I started by saying, you know, we're unique. So we are our own NFTs in that sense, but also we're constantly losing mm-hmm. ourselves throughout, you know, across the lifespan. We lose abilities, we lose cognition to lesser and greater degrees, you know, for different individuals and so on. And just, so it's also like speaking to yourself, addressing yourself in that you, because you're constantly losing that you, and the idea of being able to mint it and hang on to it in some way is very appealing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really like the kind of the hashtag line, because I think hashtags are both kind of considered a little bit, I guess, like corny, and it's kind of, you know, a little bit like if people put hashtags in a post now, you know, it's like they're trying hard. But it does like tether it to like other, you know, hashtags, and then you can like, you can actually like create more weight by putting a hashtag down. So I just think that line is really, really interesting about like, what is digital weight and what, yeah, it's just, it's doing a lot of things, I think, on a lot of levels, like per line, but especially that line for me.
Yeah, it is a really cool line. Yeah.
I'm thinking too about sexuality itself, right? Of mm-hmm. getting yep. so digitized. You know, we start on our knees, right? Mm-hmm. And then you know, that hashtag line is my tongue, right? Begging for a bit of action. Is there mm-hmm. mutual interest? Mm-hmm. Right? It's
Yep.
the connection that we could have is no longer sexual, right? Is there, or even that sexuality has become digitized.
And I love how that moment, tell me, is there mutual interest, is the only moment in the whole poem that seems to be allowing the you to respond. Because the rest of it is so in command and just flowing so strongly forward, like you're coming with me now, this is what's happening. So I love how that moment kind of brings a pause.
Yeah. But then the next line I find aggressive.
Yes, right? But right back into it. Interest,
I can tell you that I'm priceless.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but and keep going, right? Watch closely before I become a liability, before your pockets explode, right? Like before the scales begin to rebalance themselves. And that's, I guess that, Dagny, you've often said this too about like how a poem can be read multiple ways as part of its richness. And I really feel that here. It's like on one hand, you've got this sort of erotics of desire, right? But then the erotics of taste, right? And taste and desire they're kissing cousins when it comes to the acquisition of art. But again, the sort of like the body, the my body as an NFT, this also can be read as a direct address to us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, hi, I'm a poet. My body is my NFT. And I can guarantee you that the weight of my tongue is going to turn your head, right?
Absolutely, Marianne.
Which yeah. I love the sort of the turning and the turning and the turning. And yeah. I'll say one other thing too, like just looking at the line breaks here, the word you and I just are threaded through the poem, right? And it's interesting how many times I sits at the end of a line or close to the end of the line, plus you, right? And then the last word of the poem is themselves, right? It just seems like an interesting, like the pronouns are actually doing a ton of work here.
Yeah.
And I like the ending too, because you know, I very much would like the scales to turn back so that the material is material again and more important than the digital world. But there's also the acknowledgement to be made that the digital world has like given a lot of space for a lot of voices, and it has been like a meeting place for kind of like-minded folk to meet. But it makes me think of the writer Sam Chris, who has talked about how like the internet is already dead and how it's already, you know, more abundant on its way down, and like what that will mean for people who, you know, have gotten so much out of it, whose voices have become so kind of popular and well-known because of it.
Sam, say the name of that author again.
Sam Chris.
Sam Chris.
With a K.
All right.
I mean, the problem with the like-minded was that, you know, it was great when it was, you know, trans people and queer people, and it's not so much fun when it's Nazis.
Right.
Who then take over your government.
Right.
Yeah. Still trying to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I thought this did a really, really nice job of kind of like spinning that out and having a sense of humor about it and a tongue-in-cheek kind of approach that's never, it never really reveals its position. Like it never becomes kind of a position paper on NFTs. It always kind of stays in this really playful space, even with the scales begin to rebalance themselves, where there's a sense that like, you know, whatever has been said is out of whack and some kind of order will be restored.
Yeah. The insistence on embodying it really means it's not an opinion piece at all. It's an experience, I would say.
I like that.
Yeah, and it also, I mean, for me, this really makes me think a lot about like Ovid's Metamorphosis and just thinking about like that natural state being a chaos again and kind of like any moment, you know, like just waiting for the rebalance. I don't know if it's a rebalance or if it's just change again, you know?
Let me ask something. Why are we starting on our knees and shackled? shackled and on our knees.
So I took that as like slave to technology, slave to the overwhelm of the digital, right? Whatever, like you're burdened by the like some sort of digital world and institution that is keeping you from your full humanness. So that's why we start shackled.
Also, just with the dynamics of the you and I, right? The you and me, throughout the whole piece. And if you look at any of this as like based in a relationship, right? All other readings aside, there is also just that dynamic of discovery in a new relationship, especially an intense one. And so for me, those opening lines are around the fact that if you kind of go into that with another person, you are in the dark, you are very vulnerable. So I feel like it's doing a lot of work and being very effective on that front too, just working with the whole notion of a you and I and the potential, because you know, right at the very end, right? So watch closely before I become a liability, before your pockets explode, etc. I mean, to me, that's all around how relationship dynamics can go wrong too. And again, it's just one facet of so many in this poem.
Kathy, what did you think?
I asked because I wanted to know. Like, yeah. I said, I kind of saw, I got a sexual image before, but then I was thinking about what I said earlier, like the body is restrained. Mm-hmm. Like we are so, you know, we are and are not our bodies.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's everything and nothing to us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it works. I think it sort of, you know, ties into this coherence of, around power, right? It's around power, emergence, authority, desire, ownership, consumption, you know, and taste, frankly, like what's valuable, you know, and how do you persuade someone of the symbolic or whatever kind of value, right? That the body, the mind, the writer holds, right? Because I think it's like, allow me to unshackle your wrists. And that calls to mind like an image of slavery, right? And what are we enslaved to, right? Like bring you up off your knees and up to speed, right? So slavery sexually, right? Or slavery institutionally, ideologically, and then it sort of narrows down into the body of the artist.
Well, nicely said, Mayor.
Oh, yeah.
Well, slushies, you're also hearing a lot of pauses. I think we're also thinking as we keep contemplating at this. Again, take a look. This one's long and skinny. Mm-hmm. But do take a look at pbqmag.org and you'll see how contemplative you'll get as well. But we can all be silent on our own, right? Are we ready to throw thumbs?
Let's do it. Let's move.
No, let's throw some thumbs.
All right. One, two, three. Yeah. No dramatic tension whatsoever when I tell you that it's unanimously in. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jody Ballas, again.
Thanks, Jody.
All great this time pieces. And space to discuss your work. And thank you, Slushies, for listening.
That's so great. Bravo!
Yeah.
I feel like this is our first two for two in a while.
Been a minute.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great to be together again, and we'll be flowing with episodes in 2024. We're reaching our anniversary. I should know this, Marian. Mm-hmm. Is it like 7 years?
17. Who knows? What are
seven? Numbers? Yeah, 7 years. Yep, it'll be 7 years.
Yay.
Marion and I have an entity that is the person that we become when we are together. And her name is Karen, which we came up with.
Not a bad way.
We have nothing to do with the modern usage of Karen. We do not bitch at waitresses. We are nice to waitresses.
Your name. I think you need to change your combined name.
I know, but Marion and Kathleen becoming Karen is so perfect.
No, that was my name. I would change it.
I know.
Right, we need a new.
It's been for so long, honestly. Since we began.
Well, times changing, Kathy.
That's right. Times are changing.
Anyway, we thought of it. We dreamed of it 7 New Year's Eves ago.
That's true. And then we might have been on our second bottles too. And
easily on our second bottles. The other really special moment of that night was when Jonathan opened a champagne bottle with a sword.
It might have been a butter knife, but yes.
A sword or a butter knife?
Yeah, you can do that. You take a bottle of champagne, you like keep it cold and upside down, and then you just like run the knife along the edge and it'll pop the cork. This is worth a Google.
Ooh, okay.
Yep, and Samaritan's teaching
us
it.
So much.
You need a YouTube channel in which all of these things happen. I don't believe in them. Like
I'm okay.
I mean, I believe them because I believe you, but I.
So right. You're gonna add that to the show now.
The bottleneck. You don't whack it.
No, you take. And Samantha knows this because they do it at the St. Regis in Abu Dhabi when the. So it's right at sunset to mark the end of the day and the partying to begin. You take this bottle and they do it with the saber, so not wrong about the sword. And they just run it along the neck of the bottle and it pops the cork. Mm-hmm. And the glass shoots out or not inward, and then everybody drinks.
Okay, so we need a video for that.
Okay.
And I think we also need a good sangria recipe for all that cheap leftover wine.
Yes.
all you need is to have, like, you know, the first two glasses need to be something of quality. And after that, you don't notice care.
That's exactly my point. You drink a good bottle to start, and then you switch to this stuff.
Yeah,
and you're fine.
Actually, and it's called sabering. You saber.
See, no wonder I had a sword in my mind.
Good. He sabered with a butter knife.
We have to ask Jonathan for backup. He definitely doesn't have only a butter knife in his hand. It's a grand gesture.
Are we still recording?
I will ask. All right. Amazing.
Well, otherwise, thank you for listening to our shenanigans. Let us know how we're doing. Send us an email. Mary, are you okay?
But I forgot we were recording.
Yeah, I think all that should stay in for sure. It's the ho ho holidays.
Ho ho.
Thank you so much for listening. Thanks everybody for being here. Everyone, keep reading.